Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Yud Gimal. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilu Nishmat Rachel Bat Yafa. Ruach Hashem Tanichena Began Eden. Dedicated by her grandchildren. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilu Nishmat Abraham Ben Esther. Amen. We are starting on Yud Bet Amud Sheni, on the bottom, two lines, actually three lines from the bottom, the last word on the line. Be'emet Amru HaHazan. We learned in our Mishnah regarding reading by the light of a ner, of a lamp on Shabbat. The Mishnah said that the Hazan Ro'eh Hechan Tinokot Kor'in. Hazan is able to see where the tinokot, where the children are reading from, when they're preparing their parasha. Aval hu lo yikra. But he himself is not allowed to read. The children could read, but who? Lo yikra. So the Gemara here asks a contradiction. The Gemara says, Veha amart resha ro'eh. You said in the beginning of the Mishnah that the Hazan can be ro'eh, meaning he's able to look on with the tinokot. My love, likrot. What does ro'eh mean? Ro'eh means to look in order to read. And then you tell me a moment later in the Mishnah, but he can't read. He can't be koreh. Make up your mind. If he could be ro'eh, and we're understanding ro'eh means to be koreh, so the Mishnah is in effect saying, ha-hazan koreh, aval eno koreh. What does that mean? So the Gemara says, lo, lesader, when it says ro'eh, it doesn't mean that he's able to read from the sefarim, from the books that the children are reading, because really he has a restriction, because it's the ora ner. And we're worried that he might come to be mateh the ner. He might come to tilt the ner. So what does it mean when it says ro'eh? So he says you're allowed to look at the highlights of the parasha. What does it mean, the highlights? Dashe perakim, the parashiyot, as she says, umeritzan befiv. He's able to read the tops of the parashiyot, like the first pasuk or the highlight of the parasha. Shemitok shirosh parasha shigura befiv. Since he's fluent with the beginning of the parashiyot, who niskar bekula. So he just reads the top pasuk. Oh, he remembers the whole parasha that follows it. The mahar, and he'll remember it for tomorrow. Umisayeya et hashiva'a korin benekuda b'ta'ameh belachash. And then he can help the person that's going to get the aliyah the next day to read the sefer. If he makes a mistake, he'll correct him on the nekudot, he'll correct him on the ta'amim. So that was the Hazan's job, the way that she explained in the Mishnah. He used to invite the seven alim to the sefer Torah. But he also had to prepare the parasha, just in case they're not fluent or they make a mistake, so he's got to know it. So how would he review? So on Friday night, when the tinokot were reading their parasha by the light of a ner, so that the Mishnah says he's able to look over them just to get the beginning of the parashiyot, he gets the first pesukim, so to speak, and then right away on his own, he'll remember, oh, okay, that parasha goes like this, and he'll review it in his mind, and he looks over again, and he gets the first pesuk, and he reviews that parasha, but he cannot read, per se, from the tinokot's books, because, of course, we're concerned, shem yateh. So when the Mishnah says, ro'eh, ro'eh means rashe parashiyotav. וכן אמר רבה בר שמואל, אבל מסדר הוא ראשי פרשיותיו. He's able to put in order for himself the ראשי פרשיותיו, the important or the ראשי, the highlights of the parasha. Comes again around and says, וכולה פרשתה לה. But you're telling me that he's not allowed to read the entire parasha with the tinokot? We have a question from a braita. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer, Hatinokot shel bet Rabban, the tinokot shel bet Rabban, the children, hayu misaderin parashiyotehen, they were actually reading the entire parasha. They were putting their parashiyot in order, vekorin leoraner, and they were reading by the light of the lamp. So you see that it really is permissible to read the entire parasha. Proof being that the tinokot would sit down and they would read the entire parasha. So why are you telling me that you cannot read the entire parasha? Here we see the tinokot could sit down and read the whole parasha, not only Rashi parashiyot. The first answer I can tell you, when it says in this Braita that the children would read the parasha, it means they would only read Rashi parashiyotav. They also would only read the highlights of the parasha, the beginning, in order for them to remember their work, their parasha. V'ibayitema shani tinokot. I give another answer. Tinokot are different, which means there's a difference between the hazan, which is, like say, the teacher or the reader, the adult, and the children. The adult can only read Rashi parashiyot. However, the children, they can read the whole parasha. Why? Why are we concerned that they might come to be not there? Ho'il ve'emat rabban alehem. Since the fear of their rabbi is on them, lo atel atztuye, they are not going to move, which means they're not going to make any gesture, stick out their hand to tilt the candle without getting permission from their rabbi. And even during the week, not only on Shabbat, when they're sitting in front of the rabbi, they're sitting with fear. So as she says on the top line, ve'emat rabban alehen, en poshtin yad leshum davar. They don't stick out their hands for anything. Va'afilu behol, el al pi rabban. Only by the word of their rabbi. So we're not concerned about the children making hataya. So therefore they can technically read the entire parasha, no problem. However, the hazan that's looking over, we're concerned that if we allow him to read the entire parasha, so the children are not going to stop him. He's not scared of the children. So therefore he might come to make hataya. Therefore they only allow him to read the parashiyot. There's a very interesting Rav Nisim Gaon over here that gives another explanation of why the tinokot, we're not concerned that they might come to flicker. So he says, in the Perush over here, on the first wide line of Rabbi Nisim Gaon, Uperush Devrem, is actually quoting from the Yerushalmi, Ki atinokot yitrahakum min hakiriyah. The children don't want to read really. And they'd rather that the ner goes out. Because if the ner goes out, they don't have to read anymore. The anu betuhim bahim, and we're certain ki him lo yatu et haner. We're certain that they're not going to try to keep the lights on. If the light, as long as the lights are on, there's school. Once the lights go out, they go home. So they don't think the kids want to sit and read. They don't want to read. So therefore, the Yushami has a very practical understanding why you're not interested that the tinokot are going to be matedene. So talem leklot leoran edeleka lemeash shemiyate. Aval hazan lo yikra da'ashin et shemiyate lefi shelo yirtse shikhve haner. The Hazam wants the children to learn. That's his job. So therefore, he wants the light on. So therefore, he was concerned that he might come to be met there. So each one according to his position. Now, there's a top Tosafot over here. The Tosafot of Meti there. Let's review the Shekla V'Teriyah of the Gemara so we can understand what Tosafot's saying here. The Gemara started telling us that the Hazan can only read Rashi Parashiyot. He can only read the highlights, let's say. Can't read more than that. So the Gemara brought a metive, a question from a Braita. The Braita is Rabban Shimon Gamaliel that says Tinokot could read the entire Parasha. So comes the Tosafot and says, Omer Aram, Lefi Perush HaKunteras, Shepiresh B'manditin Hazan Ro'eh Hechen HaTinokot Korim Le'oraner, which means, we learned in one interpretation of Rashi, Rashi said in the Mishnah that the job of the Hazan is, he would look where the Tinokot are reading, that means the Tinokot were reading, and he would, you know, make sure that they're reading, let's say, in the right spot. So he says, "Ha delo parich le mematnitin." How come you didn't ask this question from the Mishnah? Means, what was the question? What could you have asked from the Mishnah? You see clearly from the Mishnah that the Tinokot are reading. Which is the Hazan is looking over the Tinokot that are reading. That means the Tinokot are reading the Parashah. So what did you have to ask me a question from a Braita of Rabban Shimon that shows you that the children are reading the whole Parashah? You could have brought it from the Mishnah. It says the Tinokot are reading the entire Parashah. So what's the, why would you have to create the Braita? So he answers and says, Ha de lo parikli ma'nitim mishum de ikal ma'ma de korin be isur. Could be the children are making it. I could say, the Mishnah has no question. I could say the children are reading the whole parasha, they're doing it be'isur. Ve'en mochin bi'adam, and the Hazan is not rebuking him. So you have no proof that it's permissible. However, from the Braita, it says misaderim. Misaderim means that the Hazan actually is preparing for them to do the entire parasha. So therefore, it's mashma that it's mutar. So you shut the Mishnah, I can say the children are reading, the Hazan just looking over. They don't get surah, and then the Hazan, he wants to get away the parashah, he wants to know what parashah is, therefore he's not getting involved whatever the children are doing. So you have no ayat permissible. But when the Banjuwa says, Misadirin parashut, as if the Hazan sets the parashut in front of the children to read, if it wasn't permissible, he would not do it. So therefore the Braita is more of a question than the Mishnah. Comes the Gemara and continues, Kayyotsebo. Similarly, Lo Yochan Hazav. He said in the Mishnah that a Zav should not sit and eat with a Zava. Let's review. A Zav and a Zava are a man and a lady that had an emission out of their body, and the Zavut is Tameh. And therefore we're talking about a Tameh and a Tameah should not sit down at the table to eat. What are we concerned about? Hergel Avera. And it might lead to them when they're sitting, let's say, alone, they could lead to commit an Avon. So comes the Gemara and says, Tanya, we have a Braita. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Bore, come and see. Adhechan parzat tahara b'Yisrael. Look how much the purity was rampant in Israel. Jeez, look how careful the Jewish people were at this time to keep the laws of tahara, to keep the laws of purity. Why? Shelosh shaninu lo yochal atahori matemea. Because the Mishnah did not say that a tahor person cannot sit with a tameah person. Ela lo yochal hazav im azava mipnei hergel avera. We only said a zav and a zava, that those are two people that are tameh, should not sit together. Now, if you're worried about hergel avera, if you're worried about coming to make sin, even a tahor person should not sit with a zava. Because if the tahor person, let's say the husband is tahor, and they're sitting with his wife that is a Zava. So therefore you also should be concerned that he's going to be with somebody that is Teme'ah. So just like the Mishnah gave a case of a Zav and a Zava, just like they're forbidden, so to a Tahor is forbidden. So why did the Mishnah say, Lo yochal tahor im hazava? So the explanation the Gemara is saying, because the Jewish people in that time were so careful that a Tahor would never sit with a Zava. It wouldn't happen. So they were so careful on the laws of Tahara, it's not shayach to happen. So therefore, the only case the Mishnah says is a Zav and a Zavah. Now they would sit together because bottom line they're both Tameh. So, but still now it's saying you shouldn't do it because why? It can lead to Avera. Let's look at Nashi. Shelo shaninu lo yochal taori matemea, third line. The Mishnah doesn't have to say the case of Tahori Mazava. She tells us in the olden days, they used to eat all their food in purity. Which is technically, if you're not a Kohen, so the regular food that you eat, you really don't have to be careful if it's on any level of Tum'ah. For example, let's say a Sheni level. There's no issur of eating regular food that's not holy on a Sheni level of Tum'ah. But in the olden days, the people were careful to eat their chulin, meaning their regular foods. A Yisrael would be careful to eat his regular foods on a level of purity like Tirumah. They were very careful. So he says, therefore they would not eat with their wives when they were Teme'ot. Why? Because it could render their food that they were eating B'tahara, it could render it Tameh. So therefore there was never a thought even to talk about a Tahor sitting with a Zava, or a Tahor sitting with a Nida, because they were very careful not to sit with them at all when they were Tameah. Why? So their foods do not become Tameh. But what do you mean? They were not Kohanim. No, these people were careful even to eat Chulin B'Tahara. So therefore the Mishnah to give a case of a Zav and a Zava, who anyway they're Tameim. So therefore they would sit together. So the Mishnah says they shouldn't. Why? Because they'd get Lavra could lead to sin. Well, similarly, lo yochal zav parush im zav amaris. So now the Gemara says a zav parush, that would be zav that says a tamid hakam. It's parush. He's religious in the sense that he's normally very careful on his eatings, and he only eats things betahara, but now he became a zav. So he's called a zav parush. And he should not eat with a zav amaris. He should not sit with the zav amaris. Shemi yergilenu etzlo. So the Gemara gives a reason over here. Shemi yergilenu etzlo, which means he might give him some of the food. They might eat together and give him some of the food. So the Gemara says, well, let him give him some of his food. What's the big deal? V'chi margilo etzlo may avi. Even if he gives him some of the food, they're tameh anyway. Which means even the zav parush, his food that he's eating is tameh. Because he's a zav. So what are you worried if a zav parush would sit with a zav amal? So we're not talking about a man and a lady now. We're talking about two men. So you're not worried about it's going to lead to avera. So what are you worried? Oh, but the zav parush is normally careful to eat betahara. So you're worried the zav amahar is going to give him something that's not tahor. What do you mean? Nothing's tahor. What he's eating is not tahor because he's a zav. So what's the issue? So he goes, Ela ema shemi yachilenu devarim teme'im. So he might feed him devarim that are teme'im. So comes Gemara and says, Atu zav parush lav devarim teme'im achil. What, the zav parush is not eating devarim that are teme'im? So therefore you have to understand the first piece of the Gemara was, Shemi yergilenu etzlo, means that if they eat together, it might become accustomed. Shemi yergilenu. And we don't want it to become accustomed, that they should be sitting together. So the Gemara says, why? Oh, because we don't want the zav tameh, the zav amaharis, to feed the zav parush things that are tameh. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? The zav parush is also eating things that are tameh. Everything is tameh. They're all tameh. They're zavim. Amar Abaye, gezerah shema yachilenu devarim she'enam metukanim. We're concerned that he might give him food that is not metukan. Meaning, we're worried that he might give him, let's say, food that he didn't take ma'asir from. Different issue. Which is, you're right. Food that's tameh is tameh. With the zav parush is eating is also tameh. But we're concerned if they get used to sitting together, the zav amar is going to offer him, let's say, you know, a piece of bread. And that bread was made from wheat that the amaharis did not give his ma'asir. So therefore he's going to end up eating things, not that we're concerned eating things of tameh. Everything's tameh. And that's not metukan. The ma'asir wasn't given. So therefore zav parush shouldn't have any company with the zav amaris. The Rava Amar, Rava says no. Rav Amaris me'asrin hin. Majority of Amaris people do give their ma'asir. So therefore we're not going to make now a gezerah le gezerah and say that you can't sit with them because they might give you, and even if they give you, it's a long shot, because majority of people of Amar do give ma'asir. So that's not the reason why we're concerned that they should not sit together. So what's the reason? Ela sheme yeragil etzto v'yachilenu devarim teme'in bime tahorato. That's what we're concerned. We're concerned that if they get comfortable sitting together, the zav parush might sit with the zav ava'ares when he is tahor, when the zav parush is tahor. And what's going to end up happening? We're concerned the zav amar is going to feed him things that are tameh while he is tahor. And that already is a problem. So therefore the zav parush should not share company with the zav amaris. Either because we're concerned he might feed him food that's not me'usar. According to Rava, he said that's a long shot because rov amaris me'aslinen. So then the concern is that he might give him tameh food when he is tahor. And he might, you know, mistakenly eat it. And therefore, we don't want him to fall into a trap. So comes the Gemara and says, Ibai Elihu, we have a question. Gemara has a Sheila. Incidentally, once we're talking about eating together with the Zav on the table, the Rosh writes, that which we noheg today, to eat at the same table as a nida. A person's wife is nida, so we do sit at the same table. So he writes that in the olden days, they used to eat on small tables. Each person would eat on a small table. So when we're talking, lo yochal hazavim hazavam ipnei ergel avera, because they were both sharing a small table. So it was, they were close to each other. It wasn't as if they sit like us today on a big table, and once it's on one side and once it's on the other side. Each person would get like a lap table. That's the way they would eat. So therefore, if they're sharing the same table, they're quite close to each other. But bizmanenu, that we have a different eating, so therefore the Hakamim allowed us to eat with a lady, let's say, that's nida. Of course, the halakha says we put a hekir on the table, we put something on the table just to remind ourselves that she's nida, but it's not as strict as it was, because the eating habits were different. That's also, that's what Rishonim bring down. Comes again, and continues, Iba'ilehu, nida. Ma'u shetishanim ba'ala. Is it permissible for a lady that's nida? Is it permissible for her to sleep in the same bed as her husband? He bibigda, vehu bibigdo. But everybody's wearing clothes. Which means they're both wearing, let's say, their pajamas. Is it permissible? That she? Shetishanim ba'ala bimita. Kegon shehu tameh. Now that she's bothered with the question. What are you talking about? You just told me that the Jewish people in this time over here were very careful in the laws of purity. So why would a man sleep in the same bed as his wife, the sanida, that can render him tameh? Which means we've just learned, as she told us, that they wouldn't even sit with their wives at the table because they were concerned that their chumin is going to be, or they're going to become tameh. So therefore, now what's the Gemara's question? Huh. Can a man sleep in the same bed as his wife, nida? What do you thought? What happened to the level of purity? So that she says one of two answers. Either, kegon shehu tameh, we're talking about a case where the husband was tameh anyway. He had his own tumah, tadekan lebehash meshum tahara, so therefore there was no issue of tahara. He's tameh as well. Or, second answer, bizman hazeh, she'en bo tahara. Today, nobody's careful in tahara. We can't be careful in tahara because everybody's tameh. We don't have any form to really purify us. So, can a husband sleep with his wife in the bed when she is nida? Rashi continues, mihayshinan hergil avera. Do we say that it can lead to sin? Or dilma kivan diikai kera? Or do we say since there's a heker? What's the heker?
Clothes.
They're both dressed, which means they're not sleeping in the bed as they normally sleep. Which means in the olden days, that she's going to bring down, that they didn't wear pajamas in the bed. That was the normal way. So now the fact that they're clothed in the bed, so they're sleeping in a different manner, so they'll remind themselves, they'll remember. So that's the she'ela of the Gemara. Again, Iba'ilu nida ma'u shetishanim ba'ala hi bibigda bihu bibigdo. Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yosef Tashema. Come and listen. Rabbi Yosef is going to bring a proof. Now, let's just review some of the laws of milk and meat, because that's where the proof is going to come from. Torah says, Lo tebashil gedi b'halev immo. Says it three times. From those pesukim where we learn that you're not allowed to cook a gedi, let's say a meat of a goat, with a kid in its milk, in its mother's milk. So we learn the laws that one is not allowed to cook milk and meat, and if one does, he makes a sin from the Torah. Not only if he cooks it, but also if he eats it, it is forbidden from the Torah. That's talking about regular meat. However, Hachamim came along and were osir chicken, which means to eat chicken and milk together, or let's say to cook them together. We are gozer gezerot midrabanan, that he might come to eat them together, and if we allow them to eat chicken and milk together, they might come to eat meat, regular meat and milk together, which is asur from the Torah. So all restrictions of chicken are on the rabbinic level. So now we're going to discuss some other gezerot that the rabbis made regarding chicken and milk. Tashema, ha'of ole ima givina ala shulhan. Bet Shammai holds that you're allowed to place chicken and milk on the same table, but you just can't eat them together. That's she, ala shulhan, she'ochel alav, the table that you're eating on. Mutar laniach basar ha'of etzel ha'givina. You could put the chicken next to the cheese. Ve'kasavri bet Shammai basar of be'halav lav de'oraita. like we hold, it's not really d'oraita anyway, chicken and milk. Velo gazin hala tu achira. We're not going to make a gezerah that if we allow you to put it on the same table together, that you might come to eat it. That's already too far-fetched. So even eating it is only yisud rabbanan. So Bet Shemai says, I'll allow you to put it on the same table. Ah, you might come to eat it. Even if you eat it, it's only yisud rabbanan. So therefore, I'm not going to gozer ha'ala'a, putting it on the table, suspect that you might come to eat it. So Bet Shemai is lenient in this case. However, Devrei Bet Shemai, betelel omer, lo ole, velo ne'echal. Which means Bet Shammai is Bet Hillel is Mahmir. Bet Hillel says you can't put it on the table because we're concerned you might come to eat it. So you see over here Bet Hillel is Mahmir. So say the same thing by the case of Nida. We're not going to allow them to be in the same bed together. Why? Because it might lead to Isur. And this is even more strict because this is an Isur Deoraita if he's with the Nida. If Bet Hillel's Mahmir, by this case over here, where at worst, even if you ate it, it's only Sudra Banan, he's making Gezerot. Called Sheken, in this case over here, of the Nida, where the Isur is Deoraita, certainly we have to be Mahmir. So comes Gemara says, no proof. Shani Hatam Deleka Deot. Which is over there, you do not have minds. Meaning, in the case of the chicken and the milk, we're talking about it when a person's alone. So therefore, there's nobody to remind him. He's sitting alone. So therefore, Bet Hillel says, you're going to put the chicken and the meat, the milk on the table. There's no doubt, you're alone. So therefore, you're going to come to eat it. Shake it over, you have two people in the bed. So therefore, it's called deot, you have minds. So therefore, they can remind each other, say, oh, this is asur. Therefore, it's different. You have no proof just because Bet Hillel was mahmir by the chicken and the milk case. That's talking about somebody's alone. Well, there's only one mind there. However, in the case of Nida, it could be more lenient. She says, Deleka deot, Shne bne Adam, she is kiru ze la ze. Two people that will remind each other. Vuadina me de matzile shnuye, Deleka shinui le hekera. The Gemara could have gave another answer that there's no shinui here either. Let's understand what shinui means. Hekera. When a person is sitting at the table and he has milk and cheese and chicken on the table, there's nothing that's different than the normal way. He sees the normal cheese, the normal chicken, it's on the table. There's nothing there that can remind him, besides another person. Nothing intrinsically, the way it's there, that gives him a signal that there's something isur here. Masha'enken, in the case of Nida, they're both wearing their pajamas. So that's also a heker that can remind them that something's different over here. And therefore, in the Gemara could have answered that in the case of Nida, there's also what's called a heker, something that's recognizable. But as she says, it could have answered them, the Gemara answered better and said that by the case of the chicken and the milk, it's talking about he's alone, there was no de'ot, therefore it's asur. Mashenken by the nidat is de'ot. Comes again and says, Hachen namim istabra. It makes sense, this answer. Why? De'echa de'ika de'ot shani. That we have two people, it's different. You can be more lenient. Diktani sefer, because we learned in the sefer by the case of the chicken, Rabban Shimon Gamliel Omer, Shne achsinaim. You have two people that are staying in a hotel, two lodgers, and they're in a hotel together. Ochlin al shulhan echad. They can eat on the same table. Ze ochel basar, veze ochel givina, ve'en hosheshim. And they don't have to worry. Why? Because again, you have shtei deot. Two guys came to a hotel, now they're going to sit down to lunch. So the Rabban Shimon Gamliel says, they can sit down at the same table. One guy's eating wheat, one guy's eating chicken, one guy's eating cheese. Wow, what's the heter? So we say, because de'ot. Because by the way, there's two people over there that remind each other. So you see the same thing by nida. We have de'ot. It should be okay. So the Gemara says, hold it. Didn't we learn on that statement of the two achsenayim, the two lodgers that are sitting at the same table? Amar av hanin bar ameh amar shuelo shenu ela she'en makirim ze'etze. It's only talking about when the two guys don't know each other. Then they can sit down at the same table. Of course, we're not going to suspect that they're going to eat from each other because they don't know each other. Aval makirim ze'etzeh asurin. On the contrary, if they know each other, then it's forbidden because even though there's two people we're concerned since they know each other, come to make the isur, they'll take food from each other, end up eating milk and meat. Also, the Gemara says, so too the case by Nida, they know each other. It's the husband and the wife. So therefore, we should say it should also be Asur, just like the case of the sitting at the same table with the two Aksinaim. Which means again, the Aksinaim, the only reason why they're allowed to sit at the same table is why they don't know each other. So they're not going to come to Isur. But what's the Gemara? If they know each other, forbidden. Why? You have the ought. Doesn't matter. They know each other. Therefore, it's possible to come to Isur. So therefore, same thing by Nida say. That's just they know each other. So therefore, it should come to Isur, and therefore, it should be a problem. So comes the Gemara and says, Achi Ashta, could you compare the two cases? Why? Hatam de'ot ika shinui leka. Acha ika de'ot ve'ika shinui. Big difference. By the case of the two Aksanaim eating at the table together, the Gemara says, De'ot Ika. Yeah, granted, you have two people. However, you don't have a Shinui. There's nothing recognizable to them that they're doing something Isur. I mean, they're eating in a normal manner. There's food on the table, there's cheese on the table, there's chicken on the table. There's nothing to remind them intrinsically on the table that something is Isur. So in that case, yes, you have a reason to be Mekir, let's say you have De'ot. You have two people. But you don't have Hekir. In the case of Nida, you have two things. You have De'ot, two people, plus you have Hekir, because they're wearing their pajamas. So therefore, and that's not the normal way to sleep. So therefore, the Nida case should be more lenient, because you have two reasons to be Mekir. Let's look at Nashi. Ika shinui, by the case of Nida, it's a shinui. What's the shinui? As I told you, that they're sleeping with clothes. She'en derech lishan ela bikiruv basar. Yet in the olden days, the custom was to sleep without clothes on. They would sleep bikiruv basar. Kedichtiv she'era kesuta ve'onata. Ve'amar mor, when it says in the pasuk that a man must provide for his wife she'era, what is she'era? Amar mor she'er ze kiruv basar. That they would sleep in the bed without clothes. She'im amar, to the extent, if the husband would say, "Efshi ela he be bigda, vehu be bigdo," the husband would say that no, he wants to sleep with his pajamas. V'yotzi v'yitin ketubah. Gemara Ketubot says she has a right to ask for a divorce, and he has to pay the ketubah. So that was one of the rights that the wife had. So therefore, you see, in the olden days, they would have to do that way. So that's why we're saying over here, there's a shinui. They're sleeping in not the normal fashion, and they have the ought. Comes again when it says, "Ika de Amri." We have another version. You know, we have another version of this conversation. Tashema Rabban Shimon Megamliel Omer. It's basically going to say the same thing, just in a little different way. Rabban Shimon Megamliel Omer. Sheneach Sheneim Ochli Masulchan Echad Ze Basar Ve Ze Gevina. Two lodgers considered the same table. One eating meat. One eating cheese. Ve'etmar Allah, we learned on that statement, Amar Rav Hanin, Bar Ame, Amar Shmuel, Lo Shanu, Ela She'en Makirim Ze'et Ze. Totally talking about where they do not know each other. Aval, Makirim Ze'et Ze, Asur. The Hanin Ame, in the case of Nida, Makirim Ze'et Ze, Ninu. They also recognize that therefore it should be Asur. But in the case of milk and meat, yes, you might have two people, but you do not have a Shinui. There's no nothing. That's different. They're eating in the normal fashion. Ha'cha ika de'ot, ve'ika shinui. But the case of Nida, you have two things. You have de'ot, two people to remind each other, and you have a shinui that they're wearing their pajamas. Therefore, just a different version of the same conclusion. And therefore, we're coming out according to this. It should be mutar to sleep in the same bed as a lady, as his wife, that's Nida, as long as they are both clothed. Comes the Gemara and says, Tashema, lo yochal hazav im hazava mishum hergel avera. We're saying over here, we learned in our Mishnah, that a zav should not sit with a zava. Why? Because it might come to lead to sin. Now let's analyze. If they can't sit at the table together, so now you're going to tell me they could a man and his wife nida can be in the bed together? They can't even sit at the table together because of hirgel or because of my lead to sin. Gemara says, no, go with the rules that we just said. Again, when they're sitting at the table, you only have one out of the two reasons to be mekel. There's two people, they can remind each other, but they're eating in the normal fashion. So there's nothing different in the way that they're eating. Now, she'ekin in the bed, you have de'ot, and you have shinui. So therefore, again, the Gemara is concluding at this point, it should be permissible to be in the same bed as ishto nida. Comes the Gemara, says, tashema. We have a pasuk in Yehezkel. El he'arim lo achal. Ve'enav lo nasa. El gilule bet Yisrael. Ve'et eshet re'ehu lo timeh. Ve'el isha nida lo yikrav. So this pasuk over here is saying, as the Gemara learns in Sanhedrin, it's talking about somebody that was a tzaddik. So it's saying, El he'arim lo achal. He did not have to go to the mountains to eat. The mountains are talking about the avot. Meaning normally we live in the zechut of the avot. This person was a tzaddik, he didn't have to go to the mountains, which means he was able to live on his own zechut. That's the way the Gemara learns it. And then the pasuk says, he didn't do avodah zarah, he didn't go after his friend's wife. He did not defile his friend, but he did not commit adultery. And he did not go with a nida. So you see the pasuk is comparing adultery to nida. So the Gemara says, what's the connection? Makish isha nida le'eshet re'ehu. The pasuk in Yehezkel connects isha nida to eshet ish. What's the connection? Ma eshet re'ehu. Hu bibigdo vihi bibigda asur. Just like by eshet ish, it's forbidden to sleep in the same bed as eshet ish or somebody else's wife, even if they're both dressed in the bed. Af ishto nida, ubibigdo vibibigda asur. So too I'll say that by the nida, that it's also going to be forbidden to sleep in the same bed, ubibigdo vibibigda, just like from eshet ish. The question is, how do you know eshet ish is asur? Where does the Gemara know that? So you'd say, what do you mean? Sevara, it's only the logic. So to the, she brings actually a proof. Ma eshet re'ehu de asur lan yichud min haTorah. Which means that she's saying yichud with an eshet ish, meaning being secluded alone with somebody that's eshet ish, that's married, the lady that's married, that's called yichud, to be secluded. That's forbidden from the Torah. Now we're told just to be secluded in a room together. That the door's locked and you're alone and there's nobody around. So if you're not allowed to have yichud from the Torah, all the more so you can't jump into bed, even if they have hu bibigdo, vihi bibigda. That's, of course you can. So therefore that she's bringing a solid ra'ayah from yichud to the law of hu bibigdo, vihi bibigda. So therefore the Gemara is now making a hekesh and saying, once we know that supplies by eshet ish, and the pasuk brought nida in the same pasuk, so we'll say so to nida is asur hu bibigdo bibigda. The only question is that if Rashi's, according to Rashi's line of reasoning, it should come out according to this that nida, if you're comparing it to eshet ish, should also be asur biyehud, which means every time a lady becomes a nida, the husband should have to move out. Because Yehud, you're not allowed to be secluded with something that's forbidden to you. Just like Eshet Ish. Again, if the comparison is a complete comparison, whatever's asur by Eshet Ish has got to be asur by Nida. So the question then is Yehud forbidden by a lady that is Nida? So actually the Rishonim discussed this question over here. And the conclusion that they say is that the pasuk writes suga b'shoshanim. What is suga b'shoshanim? That there's a fence made out of roses, which means when a lady's nida, the Torah did not demand the husband to leave, and there's no restrictions of yehud. The fact that God put up a fence and said it's forbidden, even though this is like a fence of roses, which is very easy just to break through. It's not a fence of bricks. I mean, they're living in the same house. Sugah b'shoshanim. It's enough that Klai Yisrael will be protected by putting up a little fence, meaning the laws of Midah of restriction, and we don't suspect that we're going to come to make an Isur. So the question is, why not? By Eshet Ish, you're concerned. So the explanation is, because Eshet Ish will never be permissible to you. So since something that will never be permissible to you, so the Yetzirah will get you and say, you have to commit the Isur. Yeah. However, Nidah eventually shall become Tehorah, shall go to the Mikveh. So therefore, a person says to himself, why do I have to make it Isur Karet? If I just control myself for whatever the time is, I could have a Heter. So therefore, Hachamim, based on that principle, allowed a person to be with his wife Nidah, and he did not put Yehud, because she's sofa liyot muteret. But bottom line, what do we see from here? We do see from here that what? We have an answer to our question. The Gemara's question was what? Is it permissible to be with the wife, Nidah, in the bed? Now we're saying from a pasuk in Yehezkel, it's asur. Comes the Gemara and says, Ufliga derav pedat. This is arguing on the pedat. The amar of pedat lo asra Torah ela kurba shel gilui arayot bilvad. The pedat says that when it comes to a lady that's nida, the only thing that's forbidden is mamaj the isur to tashmi shamita, to cohabitate. And since that's the only thing that's asur from the Torah, so the rabbis were osir secondary types of things like hibuk, nishuk, hugging, kissing, because that could lead, let's say, to tashmish. However, the Pedat says, in the same bed together, there the Torah never forbade it at all, not biblically and not rabbinically. So we have a mahloket between the Gemara here's first opinion and the Pedat. The Pedat is going to say what? That it is 100% mutar. Again, min haTorah they only were osir tashmish and midrabbanan hibuk v'nishuk. Again, kissing, and then anything after that would be permissible. So it sounds like, according to the first opinion, if we're going in the logic, that means tashmish is asur min haTorah, hibuk v'nishuk would also be forbidden from the Torah, and therefore either that would be asur min rabbanan, because she might come to hibuk v'nishuk, which is deoraita. Comes the Gemara and says, let's read Rashi for a second, the bottom Rashi, gilui arayot, tashmish mamash, that's the pedat. Ushar kurba afilu kiru basar medrabanan. Vehi bebigda afilu medrabanan leka lemigzar. Exactly like we said in the Pedat's opinion. Three levels. Comes the Gemara and says, Ula ki have atem berav. When Ula came back from the yeshiva, hava menashek lehu leahvate, he would kiss his sisters, Abe Hadayu. Abe Hadayu means by their chest, by their bosom. The Amri La Abe Yadayu. And some say he would kiss them on their hands. Now, even though a sister is forbidden, it's one of the arayot, the person not to be with his sister, but he was lenient to kiss them. Ufriga Dide Adide. But Ula's behavior is contradictory to his own statement. Ufliga dide adide. Why? The Amar Ula. Ula said, "Afilu shum kirba asur." Any closeness to any of the ladies that are forbidden to you, it's forbidden. Which means even kissing and things like that to a sister. Why? Mishum lech lech amri nezira sehor sehor lekarma lo tekrav, which means we tell the nazir, a nazir is somebody that cannot drink wine or cannot eat grapes. So what do we tell the nazir? We say lech lech amre nezira sehor sehor lekarma lo tekrav. We tell him, do not walk through a vineyard, because we're concerned if he walks through the vineyard, he might come to eat grapes. So we tell him, Sehor, Sehor, go around. Which means, even though from the Torah it's permissible for him to walk through a vineyard, he just can't eat the grapes. But you know what? We put a fence up. We don't want him to make an issue, so we tell him, go around. So the same thing Ola was saying. We don't want a person to come to make, let's say, isur with the arva, therefore really he shouldn't even kiss them. So comes the Tosafon and says, but he kissed them. Then he says that you shouldn't do it. Uh-huh. So the bottom Tosfot over here in Pliga says, V'hu aya yodeya be'atzmo shelo yavo lidei hidhur shetzadik gamur aya. Which means the Gemara goes, doesn't tell us this part, but Ola, obviously we have to say, was Sadiq Gamur, a full, complete Sadiq, and therefore he was not concerned that this is going to lead to any type of Isur. Like we saw in Gemara Ketubot that says, Rav Adah bar Ahava markiv la akatfe umirakid. Rav Adah bar Ahava would take the kalot at the brides at the wedding, and he would carry them on his shoulder and dance with them. So when they said, you know, how could you do such a thing? You're not scared of the Yetzer Hara? Actually, the rabbi said, can we do this? So, which means, if it's similar to you, like a beam, then you can do it. Which means, the Adam Rava was saying, it's like a pole that's on my head, which he had no, any feeling at all. While the Gemara did not elaborate to tell us all this, but we have to say that that was Ula's logic. Now, regarding this practice of kissing the sisters, so there's an interesting Ben Ish Chai over here in his Sefer Ben Yoyada. First of all, he explains exactly what Ula was doing. He goes according to the Kabbalah, exactly what this kiss represented. So it just wasn't stam over here, affection. Then he says, "Nimsa yam minhag etzel rishonim bizman hachmei haTalmud lenashek al hazeh." We see the custom in the times of the Talmud was to kiss by the bosom. V'lachen yesh minhag pu'irin uBagdad. He brings an interesting custom that they had in Baghdad. Shakala, that the bride, belel hachupa, on the night that she's getting married, kishetelek mebet abia lebet ba'alam, when she's leaving her father's house now to get married, tenashek be'et telucha kodem yitziyata mepetach bet abia, before she would leave her father's house, she would kiss le'avia ulahia gedolim ala begadim shem keneged adadim shelahem. She would kiss the father also by the chest and also her brothers in that same area. Why that time? Only at that time, before she's leaving to get married, they would have this custom. So he says, it was a hint. Even though now I'm leaving your house and going to live with my husband, I am still in your heart. Which means I, my heart is still in my mind, so to speak. I'm still attached to you. Like one, two best friends said to each other, one said, when one was going to a far off land, you're far from my eyes, but you're close to my heart. So that was a symbolic thing to tell the family, you'll still be a mother. They would kiss them by their heart. So you see, technically, it's not asur. Although Arambam writes in his halakha that it's what he calls is davar mechoar. It's disgusting behavior for somebody to kiss relatives like this that are really forbidden to him. That would include sisters, that would include aunts, etc. This does not include, obviously, mother, does not include grandmothers. But besides that, this would be asur, aunts and cousins, etc. Rambam says mikhaar, it's a disgusting practice, and B'nai says should keep away from such a thing. In any event, the Gemara continues. So again, according to this Gemara's conclusion, besides Rav Pedat, the Gemara says it's forbidden to be in the same bed as Nida, even who bebigdo, the he bebigda. And that is the halakha. Now comes the Gemara and says, tells a story. Tane de Beliau. We have a braita from Eliyahu Hanavi. Maaseh b'talmid echad. There was a story with a certain talmid, a certain student. Sheshana harbe. He learned a lot. Vekara harbe. And he read a lot. And shana is like mishnayot. Actually, we would change it around. It makes more sense to say kara harbe. First, he learned a lot of chumash, and after he went from chumash to kiriyah, he moved on to mishnah, and that's actually on the side. The Rif and the Rosh changed the girsa around. So he was kore harbe, and then he was shone harbe, and then vishimish tamid achamim harbe, and he also served the tamid achamim. Rashi explains after he learned his mishnah. He studied Gemara, that's called Shimush Tamid HaKamim. They explained to him the depth of the Mishnayot, the reasons, the missing words, the Hasunei Mehsaraz, the statements that were missing. That's called Shimush Tamid HaKamim. He was able to establish his Mishnayot to make them, to put them in order. So comes the Gemara and says, Umet v'hasi yamav. But he died young. Hasi yamav means like he died at 35 years old. Say a normal lifespan is 70. So he died a young man. So his wife took his tefillin, her husband's tefillin, she would go around to all the synagogues that he would attend, and all the yeshivot and batim midrashot that he attended. And she told the rabbis, says that what the Torah gives life. Ba'olam hazeh. Again, she was questioning the judgment over here. Why should my husband suffer such a fate to die in half his life? And nobody was really able to give her an answer. So Eliyahu Navi says, one time I was a guest by her, and she was telling me over the whole story how her husband was a religious man, and look what happened to him. So I asked her, Biti, my daughter, when you were nida, when you had the tumat nida, which means the 7 days. According to the Torah, a nida is tume'ah for 7 days. What was your behavior during the 7 days of nida? Amra li, so she said, Has v'shalom, God forbid, afilu be'etzba ketana lo nagami. He didn't even touch the small finger, which means we were very, very careful in the laws. Then Eliyahu asked, in the time of Libun, now Libun literally means white, meaning during these 7 clean days. Now Rashi tells us that this is talking about a Zava, which means again from the Torah law, 7 clean days only has application to a Zava. Let's review the laws quickly. A Nida from the Torah, 7 days, and then she goes to the mikveh. You do not need 7 clean days. Let's say she has her nida for 5 days, and then she has to wait 2 more days, and then that night of the 7th night, she can go to the mikveh. That's the Torah law. However, there's a case of a zava. That's a lady that sees tumah that comes out of her body in the 11 days after her nida, which means the nida is 7 days. In the 11 days following her nida, those days are called yemeh zivut, which means that whatever comes out of her, it can render her tum'at ziva. And there's all calculations how to figure it out, but it's for us to know that in those 11 days. Now, if she sees 3 times, so now she has to count 7 clean days. Clean days means that nothing comes out of her, and then she can go to the mikveh after the 7 days. That's called yemeh libun. So Eliyahu Nevi was asking her, okay, when you became Zava, and you were counting the 7 clean days, how did, what happened, what was the relationship? So she says, Bimei libuncha ma'u estecha, achal imi, no, we ate together, v'shata imi, and we drank together, v'yashan imi b'kiruv basar. Oh, and we slept in the same bed, she says, Bikiruv Basar, which means they didn't have their pajamas. Bikiruv Basar. Velo alta da'ato al davar acher. But it didn't enter his mind for Tashmish. Please, we didn't make tashmish, chas v'shalom. Ve'amarti la, when I heard this, the Arabi said, Baruch ha'makom sheharago. Blessed be the God that killed him, which means, that's it, there's justice here. She was going around saying, doesn't make sense, what's God doing, it's not right. And the Arabi says, God's right. Shelo nasa panim la Torah, because your husband did not give respect to the Torah. Why? Share amra Torah, because the Torah says ve'elisha benidat tumata lo tekrav. You're not supposed to come close and do something that could lead to isur lo tekrav. Don't even come close. Not only tashmish is asur, which means you shouldn't even do something that can bring you close to it. So therefore, sleeping in the same bed together, therefore there was a reason. Comes the Gemara and says, Ki ata Rav Dimi comes along and says, Amar, Mita Hada Havai. Which means, he says, it was the same bed. Meaning that was the whole problem in this story. They weren't sleeping Bikiruv Basar. It was just one big bed, that she says, Lehava, wide bed. Ve'lo Kiruv Basar, Ve'sabi De'sharibach. And still he thought, same bed on different sides of the bed, and still, he got punished. B'ma'araba Amri, and then in the West they even add another condition to the story. Amar Rabbi Yitzhak Bar Yosef Sinar Mavsik Beno Lebena, which means that she says she hogeret bo. She was wearing something. She was clothed with like an apron that was covering her lower body, and therefore, according to the Tier, all the conditions to this story, it comes out that it was one bed. They weren't sleeping b'kiruv ba'asamashi, they weren't touching each other, and she was dressed. And still, Eliyahu Navi said, Baruch ha'makom sheharago. So you see over here, that what? That really this would be isu. Now the only question that the Rishonim ask on this story over here is, obviously this guy was a Tamid Hakam. He was a rabbi, studied, he learned Mishnah, he had Shibush Tamid Hakamim. He didn't know this. What was he thinking? You know, to be in the bed, this. So Tosafot gives a very important answer to this. He says like this. We could be talking about over here when Eliyahu Navi answered or asked her, "Bimei livun chamahi etzlecha, etzla." When you're in livun days, what's the story? Tosafot learns it's talking about when she was nida. Now we know bezman hazeh in our time. Besides the 7 days of Nida from the Torah, a lady needs 7 clean days, even by Nida, before she can go to Mikveh. So he was saying like this, in the olden days they had a custom that, although they waited 7 clean days for Nida, but they would go to the Mikveh twice. They would go to the Mikveh after the 7 days, that's Minat Torah, they would dip in the Mikveh. So Minat Torah really, she's clean. Then they would wait 7 clean days, and then they would go to Mikveh a second time. So therefore, what happened in this case, he says, he was a Tamid Hakam. His wife, after the 7 day or 9 days, went to the Mikveh. So in his mind, he said, Minat Torah, she's 100% pure, which means now it's only Midrabanan. So he thought, it's only Midrabanan, so now to be in the same bed, it's not such a it's not such a serious transgression anymore, because it's only Sudra Bana. It's not like it's a Sudra Oraita of Nida. She's not Nida Mede Oraita. She went to the Mikveh once. So therefore he rationalized to say, it wasn't sort of blatantly, to come to a Oraita. So therefore he thought that once already she went to the Mikveh biblically, so it's okay. So the Eliyahu Navi says, Baruch HaMakom Sheharago, still, because it could have led to in Isur Lo Tekrav. You're not supposed to put yourself in such a position that can lead to such an Isur, even if it would be only, let's see, on the rabbinical level. So that's the way he justifies the Tamid Hakam's behavior. It wasn't a lady that didn't go to the Mikveh at all. Went to the Mikveh. Last but not least, the Tosafot does quote a minhag from Rashi, which actually is halakha. He says, V'Rashi Haya noheg isur lehoshit mafteach miyado liyada bimeni duta. Rashi was careful not to hand over things from hand to hand when his wife was nida. It was supposed to be the key, for example. Why? Again, the same concept. Because they were concerned if you start handing things from hand to hand, they'll come to touch each other. Once they come to touch each other, that can lead to more serious isurim. And that is halakha today, that when a lady's nida, his wife, he's not allowed to pass things from hand to hand, but they put it down first, and then they could take it from the table. Or, according to the halakha for the Sfaradim, they could throw it from one to another, and she can catch it. Ashkenazim are more mahmir, they say that they can, if you throw it, she has to wait to catch it when it's coming down. Because it's not coming from his koach, it's coming from gravity. But Sefaradim, oh, they can even throw it directly and catch, so long as it's not from hand to hand. So to conclude in this last piece of Gemara, we see that even if they were sleeping in the same bed, and there was a sinan, like that she says she was wearing clothes, she was wearing this apron, still, Eliyahu Navi said that it was forbidden. That means when the ladies need that to be in the same bed, even though they weren't touching each other, even though they're wearing their clothes, it is still forbidden. And that Eliyahu Navi said, Baruch HaMakom Sheharago, blessed be the God that killed him. So therefore, la halakha, when a lady is nida, we learn from the Gemara that it is forbidden to be with her in the same bed. That's where the halakha says separate beds, and the halakha also points out that the beds should be separate, meaning not touching each other. And as we pointed out, also the accessories on the bed also should not be touching. So you have to separate it enough where the sheets and the comforters are also not having any contact with each other. That is when the lady is nida. Comes the new Mishnah. Ve'elu min ha'alachot she'amru ba'aliyat Hananya ben Hizkiya ben Garon she'alu lebakero. The following, and these are the following halachot that were said in the attic of Hananya bin Hizkiya bin Garon, when the rabbis went up to his attic to visit him. Now, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, Hananya bin Hizkiya bin Garon was a great rabbi that wrote a commentary on the book of Yehizkel. As we're going to see, it was necessary for him to write this commentary because there was a lot of questions that the rabbis had on the Sefer Yehizkel, and their questions were so strong that they felt a lot of the pisukim of the book of Yehizkel were contradicting the Torah itself. So they wanted to take the book of Yehizkel and put it in Ginizah. They wanted to ban the people from learning the Sefer, and they were going to put it like in a in storage, so to speak. They didn't want anybody to learn it. Until Hizkiyah bin Garon came, and he went to his attic, and he spent a long time reconciling all these difficulties, and he wrote a pirush, and it's because of him the book of Yehizkel is able to be studied. So when he was in that attic for a elongated period of time to time the rabbis would come and visit him. And in one of these visits, it says the students of Shammai visited him and the students of Hillel visited him. And at that meeting, they were discussing different halachot. And since the students of Shammai were in the majority at that moment, so there were 18 halachot that came out of that meeting, and the rules were following Bet Shammai, even though normally we follow Bet Hillel. But since they were in the majority, the halakot followed them. So the Mishnah says, "Ve'elu min halakot," and these are from the laws she'amru that were said ba'aliyat Hananya bin Hizkiya bin Garon, that were said in the attic of that rabbi Hananya bin Hizkiya bin Garon. She'alu de bekaro, when they went to visit him, nimnu ve'rabu bet Shammai al bet Hillel. They counted and they saw that the students of Bet Shammai were greater in number than Bet Hillel. And therefore, as she says, Ba'u l'minyan, when they went to the count, Nimsu, Shel Bet Shammai Mirubin, the Yud Het Devarim Gazru Bo Bayom. And there were 18 enactments that were ruled on that day. Now the Gemara is going to list the 18 enactments. But first, the Gemara says, Amar le Abaye le Rabbi Yosef. Abaye tells Rabbi Yosef, Elu tenan o ve elu tenan. First, we have to analyze the first word of the Mishnah. What is the proper text? Is it like we have it with a vav, ve'elu, and these are, or is it without a vav, meaning elu? What would be the difference? We mentioned earlier in the previous Mishnah certain laws. For example, a person should not read by the light of a lamp on Shabbat. nor should he de-louse his clothes by the light of a lamp on Shabbat. Were those part of the enactments? Are those part of the 18? Or do the 18 begin going forward? Now, what would that affect the wording of the Mishnah? Well, if you say ve'elu and these, that means not only the ones mentioned previously, but the ones also that we're going to mention. Means, according to this, if you have a vav, it's going to say that the law of lo yikra adam lo haner was one of the enactments. If you say it doesn't have a vav, elu, that these are the halakhot, which means what are coming up, but not including anything that we said previously. Let's read that in Rashi. The first Rashi on the Gemara says, Ve'elu tanan, hani de amran, meaning the ones that we mentioned earlier, or dilma, or maybe, elu tanan, hani de ba'inan le memar kaman, the ones that we're planning on saying later on. Ve'elu ka'e ade le'ayel, if it says a vav, it's referring to the enactments that we mentioned above, lo yafle et kelav, person should not delouse his clothes. Ve'lo yikra, lo daner. Ve'elu min halachot, and these also are from the halachot. Not only those two that we mentioned, but these also. Or dilma, elu tenan, without a vav. Ve'kael kaman. It's going on the ones that are further on. En shurin diyo, which is going to be the case in the next Mishnah. So comes the Gemara and says again, Amale Abayel Rav Yosef, elu tenan, without a vav, or ve'elu tenan. The Gemara explains, ve'elu tenan, if it says a vav, and these, hani de amran, it includes the ones that we said above, or elu tenan, or if it says elu without a vav, deba'in and lememar kaman, the only ones that we're going to say going forward. Tashema, so come and listen. En forin lo haner, we do not delouse clothes by the light of a lamp. Then korin lo haner, and you cannot read by the light of a lamp. Ve'elu min halachot shamru ba'aliyat Hananya ben Hizkiya ben Garon. And these were from the enactments that were said in the attic of Hananya ben Hizkiya ben Garon. Shema me now, we can learn conclusively from here. Ve'elu tenan. That obviously it's a vav, because those original ones were included. And therefore, Gemara says, Shema me now, it is a conclusive proof. Comes the Gemara and says, Tanu Rabbanan, mi katav Megillat Ta'anit? Who wrote a book that's called Megillat Ta'anit? Now, what is Megillat Ta'anit? There was an enactment by the Hachamim that on any day that a miracle happened to Bnei Yisrael, they did not allow the Jewish people to fast on that day in order to commemorate the miracle that took place. Now, throughout our history, we were persecuted by many different people, many different enemies, and we were saved miraculously. So there was a special sefer that listed all those days where miracles happened to the Jewish people, and in order so we remember which days those are, so we don't fast. Some of those days the rabbis also forbade eulogies as well. That book was called Megillat Ta'anit. It doesn't mean the book of fast, it's the book of the days that you're not allowed to fast. Now, the reason why they call it Megillat Ta'anit, is the scroll of the Ta'anit, so to speak, is because at that point in history, really we weren't allowed to write the Torah Shebaal Peh. The oral law was still banned to be written. However, this over here was just like to remember the days. It wasn't really, Torah Shebaal Peh, so to speak. So they were able to write it in a scroll. So they called it Megillat Ta'anit. So the Gemara's question is, who wrote it? The Gemara says, Amru Hananya ben Hizkiyahu v'siyato. This rabbi of Al-Mishnah, Hananya ben Hizkiyahu and his colleagues, they wrote the book. Shayu mehabibin et atzarot. Because they literally means they loved the tzarot. They loved the troubles. Now, what does it mean they loved the troubles? So that she says, they loved the troubles, mehabibim et tzarot, shenigalim behem. Meaning they loved the fact that we got saved. It was very dear to them, the miracles that God did in order to save us from our enemies. Vanes habib alehem. They appreciated the miracles, lazkiro, to remember them, the shabbechos shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to praise God. So therefore, since to them the miracles were very dear to them, they appreciated it. So therefore they wrote the days down. But other rabbis learned the Gemara literally when it says, "Mehabibim et tzarot," they loved the tzarot. Not they loved the redemption of the tzarot, which is really not written in the Gemara, that she's reading into it. They loved the tzarot themselves. So the explanation, the way they say is that they understood that the tzarot, the troubles that Klal Yisrael endure, also have a value, and also have an importance, and also are a process, whether it's kaparat avonot, whether it's to atone for their sins, or whether it's to teach them other lessons in acceptance. The point is, to them, not only did they appreciate the miracle, because if God saves somebody and makes a miracle, a person might not be so happy because he'll say, well, who asked for the miracle? I wish God didn't give us the trouble in the first place that he needs to make a miracle. However, if you're from the mentality that you understand that even the tzarot are valuable, so then when the miracle happens, you're very thankful. You're thankful for the redemption, but you're also thankful for the tzarot. So these people were very, very grounded in the sense they understood also that the tzarot are important, which is there's lessons. Hence the Gemara says, "Shehayu mehabibin et tzarot." And therefore when they celebrated the miracle, it was a complete celebration. Amar Rabban Shimon Gamliel. So Rabban Shimon Gamliel says, "Af anu mehabibin et tzarot." Rabban Shimon Gamliel came later. He said, "We also appreciate the fact that God redeems us from our troubles." But what are we going to do? If we're going to start writing down all the days that God saved us from our enemies, en anu maspikin, it'll never end. Which means we won't be allowed to fast on any days of the year, and every day of the year will be Yom Tov. Seems that Rabban Shimon Gamliel lived at the time where there was great persecution against the Jewish people. So he said, you know, we did away with Megillat Ta'anit. He says, because once you're going to start celebrating all the miraculous days, in the davar sof, there's no end. Now she says, lefi she'en tadirot, because they're very frequent. The Shnah Harino, he has a different text, en anu maspikim la'asot yom tov b'chol yom. We're going to have to make a Yom Tov every single day, and that's impossible. You can't make a holiday every single day of the year, so they did away with it, so to speak. Davar acher, another interpretation, en shoteh nifga. Shoteh is a fool. A fool does not get hurt. What does it mean, Rashi? En shoteh nifga. En pegara ba'alav, kelomar, eno makir bepegahav. A imbecile does not feel the troubles. They said already we became so numb to the sarot and the redemptions that already we're like an imbecile that doesn't feel the pain to feel that he got saved. So therefore we're not as appreciative as they were in the olden days, because already since it's so common, so we don't even appreciate it because it's happening all the time, so we become numb, so to speak, to the redemption and to the sarot themselves. Davar acher, a similar concept, en basar hamet margish beizmal. A dead body does not feel the knife. Which means somebody dies and you take a knife and cut him, he doesn't feel it. What they were trying to say is the same thing. We're considered as if dead, we're numb to the tzarot that are happening because they're so frequent, and therefore we don't appreciate it as much as it did in the old days for us to celebrate and make yamim tovim. So the Gemara says, "Ini, we have a contradiction. You're telling me, there's a side point. You just told me that a dead body does not feel the cut of a knife. Ve'amar Rabbi Yitzhak, Rabbi Yitzhak taught, kasher rima lamet, that the worms that gnaw at the dead body are more painful, kemah, or as painful, kemachat bebasar achai, like a needle in live flesh." So therefore it seems that the dead people do feel pain. So what are you telling me that the mit does not feel the knife? They do feel it. Shnei Emar, and he even quotes a pasuk from Iyov. Ad besaro alav yichav, v'nafsho alav te'abel. Which means the basar of the mit is going to be in ke'ev, in pain. So therefore what are you saying that they don't feel it? So Gemara says, fine. Ema en basar hamet shebehai margish beizmal. Meaning, dead flesh in a living person does not feel the pain of the knife. Let's say a person, some of his flesh, let's say, deteriorated. Therefore, there's no feeling in that area. So when you cut that area out, it's numb to the pain. So that's what it was saying. En basar hamet shebehai. The dead flesh in the living person does not feel the pain. And therefore, that was the analogy to Klal Yisrael, where there's so much pain and so much troubles that already they do not feel it enough to be thrilled at the redemption in order to make a Yom Tov. Now, at this point, the Gemara is saying that Hezkiah, Hananiah ben Hezkiah wrote the Sefer Megillat Ta'anit. So I saw a remez, a hint to that. A lot of the authors would allude somewhere in their book that they were the author of the book without saying it. Somewhere in the book they would give maybe Rashi Tevot of their name or a different allusion. So if you ever saw the opening words of Megillat Ta'anit are, Ilen Yomaya Delo Lehit Anna Abdehon. These are the days that you're not allowed to fast. Those are the opening words, the five opening Aramaic words to Megillat Ta'anit. So if you take the gematria of Ilen Yomaya Delo Lehit Anna Abdehon, it's the gematria of Rabbi Hananiah ben Hezkiah ben Garon. So including the words themselves. Imak Kolel, which is including the words themselves. So the point is, he maybe alluded to his authorship right at the beginning of the Sefer. Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda taught, Amar Rav Biram Zachur Oto Ha'ish Letov. In truth, this person, Hezkiah ben Hananiah, should be remembered for good. Why? Hananiah ben Hezkiah Shimon. His name is Hananiah ben Hezkiah. She'el Malehu. Wasn't for him, Nignaz Sefer Yechezkel. The book of Yechezkel would have been placed in Geniza. Why? Shayu Devarav Sotrin Devre Torah. Because a lot of the Pesukim in Yechezkel were contradictory to Pesukim in the Torah. Ma'asa, so what did he do? He'ailu lo. They brought up for him Gimel Me'ot Garbe Shemin. They brought from him 300 barrels of oil in order that he could light wicks, so he'll have sufficient light in his attic in order that he could devote himself to answer these questions. The Yashav Baal Yad, he sat in his attic, Vidarshan, and he gave the Dirashot. Now, she gives us an example of some of these contradictions of the book of Yechezkel. One of them was, it says in the Pasuk, Nevela utrefa lo yochlu hakohanim. Kohanim are not allowed to eat things that are not kosher. So, right away, the rabbi said, people are going to misinterpret this and say, only the Kohanim? Well, what about the Israel? All Jews are not allowed to eat nevelot and terefot. What does it mean, Yechezkel? So, he came along, and he answered, and he said the following. There is a type of food that Kohanim are allowed to eat, that everybody else is not allowed to eat. And that's called hatata'of. Somebody makes a sin in certain situations, they have to bring a bird as the korban. And the way they slaughter that bird is in a very unusual way. It's called melika. The kohen takes his nail that's long, he has a long fingernail, and he pierces the neck of the bird, and that makes the bird kosher. Now normally that's not a kosher shechita. You have to make a regular shaita with a knife and cut the simanim, the signs of the bird. Here, if you're a kohen, you get to eat an off that was slaughtered through the procedure called melika. So therefore, you would think to say, once already we're allowing the kohanim to eat such a bird that for everybody else would be considered nevela, so maybe you can eat, maybe the laws of kashrut of Nevelah Utra don't apply to the Kohen at all. That's why the book of Yechezkel had to say the Kohanim cannot eat Nevelah Utrefa. And we're coming to this because you might think the Kohanim, because they have special leniencies in other cases, that they can be totally lenient. So that's one reconciliation that he gave. Furthermore, there was another pasuk where the book of Yechezkel talks about different korbanot. that were brought on the first day of Nisan and on the seventh day of Nisan. Even though in our Torah we have no record of korbanot that were brought on those days, so he also gave a answer to where those what those korbanot were referring to. Comes the Gemara and says, "Ushmona asar davar gazru," and there were 18 gezerot that were made. So the Gemara says, "My ninu." What were the Shemona Asar Dabar? What were the 18? So now we're going to go through the 18 Gezerot. The majority of them have to do with the laws of Terumah. Now let's review just quickly some of the laws that surround Terumah. Terumah, first of all, is considered Kodesh. It is sanctified food that only the Kohanim can eat. The Kohanim must see to it that the Terumah does not become Tameh, does not become ritually contaminated, impure. Now, in the laws of Tum'ah, there are different levels of Tum'ah. The most strict Tum'ah is a corpse, which we call Avi Avota Tum'ah. Less than that, the second level down would be what's called an Abha Tum'ah. Abha Tum'ah would be, let's say, like a sheretz, like the an animal, rodent, that dies, that emanates tum'ah, or the tum'ah, let's say, of a zav, and things like that, they emanate a level called abha tum'ah. According to the Torah law, something that's on abha tum'ah level, again, I'm talking according to the Torah law, has the ability to contaminate adam v'kelim, man and vessels. Now, if an Abha Tum'ah, for example, would come in contact with a human being, it makes that human being one notch lower than an Abha Tum'ah. We call that a Rishon Letum'ah. Or let's say the Abha Tum'ah came in contact with a vessel, it can make the vessel a Rishon Letum'ah. Now, a Rishon Letum'ah from the Torah can only contaminate Ochlim U'mashkim, can only contaminate food stuff. Therefore, if a Rishon touch, let's say, food, that food would become a sheni. It goes one notch down. Now, by regular food, which we call hulin foods, the hulin regular foods that are not kodesh can go up to the level of sheni letum'ah. Now, for practical purposes, doesn't mean anything because you're really allowed to eat hulin. You don't have to be careful. But there are certain people that used to eat their hulin only betahara. They only would eat it if it was tahor. So then they needed to know if the chulin was a sheni or not. Terumah, since it's more holy, is more sensitive to tum'ah. And therefore, if a sheni touched terumah, it makes terumah a shilishi. Which means where chulin food ends at a sheni, terumah can even go one step lower and become a shilishi letum'ah. That's basically the law of the Torah. Now we're going to see some laws that the rabbis made rabbinically in order to protect the terumah. One of those laws is ditnan. Elu poslin et terumah. The following things are posel terumah. Now, I want to explain to you the word posel. Posel literally means renders them unfit. Sometimes the Gemara uses the Lashon Tameh, and sometimes it uses the Lashon Posel. Let's define the difference between Pasul and Tameh. As we said, Terumah can reach the level of a Shilishi. Past that, it does not reach. And therefore, if a Sheni touches Terumah, it'll make it a Shilishi. And therefore, in halakha, we call that pasul, meaning because it cannot go further. However, let's say there was terumah that was a sheni level. That terumah can make more terumah to a shilishi level. In that case, they would say the terumah is tameh, because not only is it itself is unfit, but has the ability to take more terumah to the other level. So when it's a shilishi, they say pasul, because it cannot go further. When it's a sheni, let's say, where it can metameh more, So that would be called tameh. Right, so now we're saying like this. These things can make tiruma a shilishi. That means these items obviously are a sheni. What are they? Number one, ha'ochel ochel rishon. If a person eats food, that is a rishon. Now let's analyze for a second. We just learned the rules of the Torah. The rules of the Torah is that only an av hatum'ah can render a man tameh. A rishon, we said, can only render foodstuff tameh. But the rabbis came along and said that if a person eats food, that's a rishon. Midrabanan it'll mitameh the man to make him a sheni. And if he goes now and touches terumah, it'll make it a shilishi. Again, I point out this is rabbinical. Because again, minat Torah, a rishon cannot mitameh adam. A rishon is only mitameh ochlin umashkin. So that's why we see it's rabbinical. Again, the Gemara is going to go into all these cases in depth and analyze exactly what the scenario is. Number two, va'ochel ochel sheni. Or if a person eats food, that's a sheni. So the rabbi said that it's going to make him a sheni as well. The sheni will be transferred to the person himself. The food was a sheni. He ingested it. He'll become a sheni. And now if he touches terumah, it'll make it a shilishi. That is the second case. Vashotem mashkim teme'in. Same thing would apply to somebody that drinks something that is tameh. For example, he drank a liquid that was a rishon. It'll make him a sheni. Touch terumah, make it a shilishi. Again, it's the same law by foods to the same law as liquids. Next case. Ve'habba rosho ve'rubo be'mayim she'uvin. If a person, let's say, was tameh, and he went to the mikveh, like the halakha says, following his immersion in the mikveh, he went and sat in a bath that had in it mayim she'uvin, water that was drawn. What does it mean, drawn? Let's say somebody took a vessel, collected water, and put it in a bath. Those waters obviously are non-kosher for a mikveh. The mikveh has to be natural. It has to come down without any human intervention. Mayim she'uvin are pasul. Now, what do we care? This guy went to the mikveh already. He's tahor. But the rabbis, as we'll see, made a gezerah that if a person who was tameh went to the mikveh and then sat in a bath of mayim she'uvin and then touched terumah, the terumah will become a shilishi. Now again, we'll have to see why the rabbis would make such a gezerah. We will see. Next case, v'tahor, or for that matter, somebody that was tahor, which means was not tameh and went to the mikveh. Somebody that was from the inception tahor. Shenaflu al rosho v'rubo shelosha lugin mayim she'uvin. That three lugin is a measurement. Let's say each log, for argument's sake, is a quart. Three quarts of water fell on his head, which means like he took a shower in three lugin of water. Also, that person, the rabbis rendered him a sheni, and therefore he touches terumah, he's going to be a, the terumah will be a shilishi. Again, as I said, the Gemara will analyze all these cases. For our purposes, we see two differences between these last two cases. The first difference is, in the first case, he was tameh, went to the mikveh, and sat in the bath. In this case, he was tahor and took a shower of three lugin. In both cases, they made him a sheni. Therefore, if he touches terumah, he becomes a shilishi. Yeah. Next case, the sefer and the sefer, which means if somebody touches a sefer Torah, automatic, barehanded, the rabbis put on him tum'ah of a sheni level. That's very strange. The sefer Torah is holy. Why should a sefer Torah emanate tum'ah? We will see. So if a person touches the Sefer, or any Kedvei Kodesh, for that matter, the Megillat Esther, or any books like that, and he touches it, he becomes a Shini, and therefore if he touches Terumah, it'll become a Shlishi. V'hayadayim. Next case. Hands. Setam yadayim. Regular hands of a person are considered a Shini l'tumah until he makes what we call Netilah Chadayim. Jeez, until a person officially washes his hands with Netilah, the rabbis put a status of Shini on his hands, and therefore if he touches Terumah, it'll make it a Shlishi. V'tevul yom. Tevul yom is somebody that has to go to the mikveh. The law is, let's say he saw keri, so he's allowed to, he had a seminal discharge, so he's allowed to go to the mikveh during the day, and then he just has to wait till the night in order to finish his purity. So the law is like this. Let's say he went to the mikveh during the day. Halakha is saying, according to this Mishnah, that the rabbis gave him a status of a sheni until nightfall. Therefore, a tevul yom, they went to the mikveh in the day, but it's waiting until sunset. If he touched terumah in that interim, that window, terumah is going to become a shlishi. Last case, case number 10, 9 and 10. Va'ochlim, va'kelim shenitme'u b'mashkim. Or for that matter, foodstuff or kelim vessels that became tameh from liquids. Obviously, let's say the liquids had the status of a rishon. They touched kelim, or they touched foodstuffs and made them a sheni. And those foodstuffs or kelim now touch terumah, they're going to make it a shlishi. And the Gemara is going to analyze this last case as well. So bottom line, the Mishnah listed to us 10 out of the 18 gezerot that we have of the Hakamim, that they made restrictions regarding those that eat terumah. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen.